96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It's been a very busy week for the news, and we have lots to talk about tonight. We're at the Reporters Roundtable with James Wright of the Afro-American Newspaper, Eric Easter of Black Public Media, and Charles Ellison with TheRoot.com. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me. We've got a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about Hope Hicks resigning from the White House today. We've got problems in the D.C. public school system again, and much, much more, including some comments that President Obama made that some may argue were uncharacteristic of the president after leaving the White House. But first of all, let's get started with this top story. Hope Hicks, the communications director for the White House, has resigned. She's going to remain there for a couple of weeks. But the bottom line is she's one of President Trump's longest serving aides and one of his closest aides. This comes after testimony before a Senate committee yesterday about the Russia probe, where she admitted to telling little white lies for the president. Let me start with you, Charles. Your thoughts about this? Surprised?
You know, not surprised, really, but, you know, it just goes to show you how intensive this investigation is getting by Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller. So, I mean, it's hard to tell whether or not this is a case of rats jumping off the ship, right? And so after the rats jump off the ship, then who else will it be? Will it, you know, start to be, you know, the senior level staff or the captain, right? You know, so, we don't know what to make out of this, because this is going to be a long ongoing investigation, but it's very interesting that, you know, just the day after she's showing up on Capitol Hill testifying about this probe, then she announces that she's going to resign, and she's moving out quick. Like, she's not wasting any time. In 2 weeks, she's gone.
And I said Senate Intelligence Committee. It's a House Intelligence Committee. Let's get that right. The thing that's interesting, Eric, is this isn't the first time that we've heard about Hope Hicks recently. Her name kept coming up in the Robert Porter investigation when you're talking about the domestic violence and his security clearance issue.
And it came up in the book as well.
Fire and Fury?
Exactly. Okay. Fire and Fury as well. And, you know, and it is really a devastating blow when you think about that this is someone who really puts a premium on loyalty and on having people around him who've been with him a while, who he can trust. We were just in the back listening to the CNN report, and, you know, the reports now are that she was berated by Donald Trump after her session with the House Intelligence Committee, that he, you know, knocked her for not supporting him more and, you know, essentially for telling the truth. So this is a devastating blow, because now all you have left of those who have been with him for a long time is Ivanka, Jared, and one of us, Scavino, Dan Scavino, are the only three people who have been with him for a while now. Everybody else has jumped ship.
You know, when is this madness going to end? I mean, Hope Hicks really did what she was supposed to do. She was under oath. She had to basically tell what was going on in terms of the White House. And, you know, I guess Donald Trump had a right to jump on her, but really she was doing what she was supposed to do. But, you know, this doesn't surprise me, because he just mentioned Jared Kushner, whose security clearance has been downgraded. And this madness is going to continue, because this White House is a mess.
Mm-hmm. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week. If you have a question, if you have a comment, join the conversation. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. I guess the thing that does surprise me, and maybe, you know, Eric, you did kind of clarify that, is that, you know, Hope Hicks, I was under the impression that she was there to stay. She's been with, you know, candidate Trump, President Trump now for some 3 years. And she has been very, very low profile. She's been extremely low profile. I think one could argue that the first time that we really started hearing a lot about her is when she was crafting the letter in reference to Robert Porter, her boyfriend, right, about domestic violence. And I find that funny because, as we've heard in the reporting, two ex-wives and a girlfriend have accused him of physical domestic violence. We've seen the photographs and the like, and her participation, one could argue, standing by her man, I just find the whole thing ironic.
Loretta Lynn.
Yeah.
Right. But with her name coming up, I mean, you just said it, that the fact that she has been low key, that we haven't really heard much about her, that we saw her face but didn't know much about her. She's never done a press conference, even though she's a communications director. But now her name is coming out, not in the way she wants to. She's being visible. And I think that had a lot to do with her getting out, because it also means she needs to get lawyered up. There was a story a while ago that she was asked by John Kelly to go get a lawyer. Actually, not by John Kelly, by
Priebus.
Yes, to get a lawyer early on, and was threatened that, you know, I'm going to tell your dad to get a lawyer if you don't go get a lawyer. Now, that happened very early on in the administration. Now, after doing the House Intelligence Committee, she had to and may still have to.
But the reporting was that during this 9-hour marathon interview with the House Intelligence Committee, that she would not answer anything about her time in the White House. So I find it interesting that the president would berate her when she essentially, according to the reporting, Charles, has said nothing.
Yeah, you know, that's the strange thing about it. But, you know, another thing, too, is that these committee meetings regarding the probe are not supposed to be that transparent anyway. There were conversations that we're really not privy to that are not supposed to be public. There could have been an exchange that only those House Intelligence Committee members are aware of, that only Hope Hicks is aware of, and that also the president, because of the sensitive nature of the committee. I mean, he's not supposed to know of anything, but maybe he was plugged in such a way where, you know, he feels like she may have said things that put him in a rather peculiar or rather tricky predicament. You know, he is getting the sense, not just with Hope Hicks, but with everyone around him, that the ship is, you know, is starting to take on water. And particularly with the security clearance issue, not just with Jared Kushner, but you're having a number of aides who are having their interim or their near top security clearances being either revoked, or being, put at standstill, because everyone's got some sort of either a personal issue, some sort of professional issue, or there is an issue dealing with, either directly or indirectly, with this Trump-Russia collusion probe.
Go right ahead, Jay.
You know, in 2009, President Obama got some grief from the Washington Post and some of the national media, if you want to call them that, about his, quote, inability to get it together in terms of the White House. Now, if you look at that compared to this,
right,
you know, President Obama knew what he was doing. President Trump doesn't have an idea. And see, this is where, Harold, you have the traditional Republicans who could come in and help him. I'm not talking about Priebus, but traditional Republicans who've been in other administrations who could come in and help him, you know, level the ship. But he's just not going to do that. Donald Trump's not going to do that. He's going to surround himself with his family, who have no experience at all in public policy. And so this is why we have this disaster that what we have now called the Trump administration.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're at the Reporters Roundtable talking about the top stories of the day. Lots to talk about here, so give us a call if you have a comment or a question. Lisa, calling from Bowie. Thanks for calling, Lisa. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wonder if anybody has ever really sat down and thought about that the reason why the GOP even nominated Trump to be their candidate is because he was controllable, or so they assumed that he would be controllable. And him surrounding himself with the people that are closest to him that would be able to keep some of the secrets that we really don't want to talk about and expand upon, if there really is something wrong with, I don't want to say it, the mental capability of our commander-in-chief. But who closest to be there than to rein him in or keep a hold on him than the Kushner or the Ivanka Trump? And with General Kelly coming in, now it's a matter of the GOP saying, okay, we've had enough time of having our puppet president, and so now we need to rein it in because they really can't control some of the things that he blurts out.
Or any of the things that he blurts out.
Yeah.
Anybody have any?
I think there was something to that. I think that the GOP did calculate that, you know, a lot of people calculated, well, he has his hands on a particular audience that we need to reach. And as long as he does, that we'll be able to get a couple of key things through. They got through tax reform. They're one or two things, maybe infrastructure that they would like to get through. And then they're sort of done with him. But I think the done with him is coming a little closer to fruition than they expected. not of their plan, and maybe not of Trump's plan, but we're getting a little closer to that.
And I think, you know, the circus within the White House, it definitely serves a purpose for Republicans because it's able to distract the larger public from, you know, some really serious issues that we're just not paying enough attention to. You know, the fact that we have this massive rollback of the administrative state, you know, like anywhere from 35% to 40% of, you know, federal regs being rolled back or being eliminated, you know, particularly those that were done under the Obama administration. You know, the fact that, you know, federal government now is pretty much non-responsive to the very serious phenomena of climate change, you know, or, you know, other issues as well that we're just not paying really deep, careful attention to because we're so focused on, you know, the circus that's happening inside the White House and also the president's tweets on an almost like daily basis. So that serves a purpose for, you know, Republicans, you know, particularly on Capitol Hill, to sneak through certain policy proposals or certain policy initiatives that they've been trying to push for years that they couldn't quite get through during the Obama years, even though they were obstructing and giving him a hard time. But now they feel that the opening's now.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Lisa, thank you so much for giving us a call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Pop calling from Maryland. Pop, I'm going to let you ask your question. You've got 30 seconds and I'm going to need you to hold on because I'm going to take a break. Go right ahead.
Sure. Here's what I want to know. Why are black media voices serving as an echo chamber for the Democratic Party and insidious media, when we have so many problems within the African-American community that our attention should be dived in or focused on?
Okay, that's an interesting question. But, Pop, I want you to hold on because I want to know specifically what you are referring to. So please don't hang up. We're going to continue with you. Also, we're going to be talking to Anthony calling from Northeast. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Please do not hang up. You will be able to hear the program. And if you're having difficulty getting through, please keep calling. I promise we will take your phone call. We're at the Reporters Roundtable. We're also going to be talking about what's happening at Duke Ellington. Report coming out this week, but some say it should have come out 2 months ago. We're talking about that, so stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More from the Reporters Roundtable in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum, the Insight segment on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation from the Reporters Roundtable with James Wright of the Afro-American newspaper, Eric Easter of Black Public Media, and Charles Ellison from TheRoot.com. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Pop, you still there?
Sure.
Well, thank you so much. So, Pop, you said black media being the echo chamber for the Democrats when we have so many issues going on. Give me that echo chamber example.
Okay. What I accurately said was black media voices being an echo chamber for both the Democratic Party and an insidious media. Now, the point that I'm making is this. Here's the specific thing. The biggest problem that we have in our community is the education system graduating functional illiterates. For example, I teach at a school in D.C., and for lunch, I went out to the carryout, and I ran into one of the students who graduated, and this guy was unemployed and asked me about a job, and I was, and that ties into the whole D.C. Narrative that they're graduating so many students who are totally unfit, unprepared for the future that's in front of them. And so, and within the African American community specifically, for example, I was doing some research on Elijah Cummings' 7th District in Maryland. It's a population of about 750,000. And the unemployment rate is hovering around 13.5%, which would put unemployment in his district around close to 100,000 people. And I mean, we have so many problems within our community. We should allow CNN and folks in the media and the Democratic Party to take our focus off of what can be done to help us out.
Right. Well, let me respond. I cannot speak for other outlets, but we have representatives from three other black media outlets. And I know that here on this program, we have spoken about this issue, not only the Ballou issue or the D.C. public school issue, but also in Prince George's County, and not just in this region, but also the Atlanta controversy of a few years ago. So I can't speak to other organizations, Pop, but we do talk about it at length. Go right ahead, Charles. I'm sure you have something to say about it.
I actually, I don't want to discount too much of what Pop is saying. He is actually making a point. There is this sort of, whereas on one hand, you do have black media outlets, particularly like either it's, like I write for the Philadelphia Tribune, the largest and oldest black newspaper in the country. And we try to focus on a number of serious quality of life issues. There is that sense that, from a lot of folks that black media is just sort of kind of watching what happens on CNN or MSNBC and then re-reporting that or regurgitating that, as opposed in-depth investigative reporting into quality of life issues like education, for example. There is a real K-12 crisis in the Washington, D.C. metro area, whether it's, graduation scandals in D.C. or Prince George's County or elsewhere, or it's, a graduation, the inability to graduate our young people and to make sure that they aren't functionally illiterate, to, people, high unemployment and east of the river in Washington, D.C. There's a real still serious black unemployment problem in the District of Columbia. So I totally get where he's coming from, and it is incumbent upon black media to make sure that they are sticking on those quality of life kitchen table issues like unemployment, low wages, education, making sure people get quality education, public safety issues, which we do on a number of levels, but there is a sense that sometimes we tend to focus a little bit too much on, the Trump gossip of the day, which we have to do, but I think that there is that frustration from folks like Pop who feel like, hey, enough about Trump, I want to hear about how my kids are going to turn out, particularly with these graduation scandals.
James, you want to say something?
Yeah, let me just say this, that the Afro has been reporting the truth since 1892 about what has really gone on in America, whether it's been lynchings, whether it's been Jim Crow segregation, what happened with Emmett Till, what went on in terms of the civil rights movement. And after that, and I understand why people who say that black media, particularly black newspapers, tend to lean heavily toward the Democratic Party, but that is not necessarily true. The reason we lean, is because the Democratic Party is the only party that's really trying, notice I said trying, to address the issues of African Americans. That other party does not care about anything and dealing with black people. So that's why we have a tendency to report more. And we've got to keep, particularly the Afro, and we do this very well, we've got to keep our eye on Donald Trump, because yes, that's true. He is the president of the United States. He's the executive branch. And then, of course, you have the Congress, but he is the president. And that nonsense that Eric was just kind of alluding to earlier about regulations and things, it is the black media, the black newspapers that keeps an eye on that.
Mm-hmm. Eric, do you have something?
No.
Yeah, you're done. They've said it all. That's Pop, it. Thank you so much. I do want to talk about this issue that has cropped up this week with Duke Ellington School of the Arts. The Washington Post reported that the state superintendent's office here in the district actually probed some of the I've got brain lock. Please
registration.
Help me. Thank you. Registration, where you have students that are attending the school that are not district residents and maybe whether the students are doing it, their parents are doing it. The basic idea is that it's fraud. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with someone outside of the district attending Duke Ellington or any other school. But the reality is that if you are not a district resident, you have to pay.
What is a district resident?
If you live legally in D.C., but what they're alleging is that, and this is not something new, is that you may have grandma who lives in the district and, you know, daddy and mom living in Maryland or living in Virginia, but using grandma's address so that they can attend Duke Ellington or any other school for that matter. And the tuition, I didn't know this,
$12,000. Well, but should say is, which is about $20,000 less than most private schools.
How about that? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And one could argue still, you know, $12,000 a year less than some decent state colleges,
right.
You know, as well.
Right.
But I think the thing that was interesting in this article in the Post is that it is alleged that an attorney within the school system asked to slow walk this issue because it is a political year. And so I don't know, Eric, which is worse, that allegation or one more problem with the D.C. public school system.
So full disclosure, I have a kid at Ellington. So
where do you live?
I live right several blocks from here, right?
Okay.
but to say that, I was actually caught up in this. I was one of those families that got dinged because I used my license and my wife's registration, mm-hmm. Car registration, which have different names on it, same address, different names, and that we got dinged, and so we got a call several months after school had started saying, hey, we need this, that, and the other thing to prove that you live in D.C. So I had to go online and get old bills and all those kinds of things. So there was a very aggressive, and I assume this is when
And you said this was when?
Maybe in December. So this
right,
is several
and that,
months
and that's when it, and that's when it happened.
Right. And yeah. So this is about when the, you know, there was an auditor, obviously, in the school. And I probably, like a lot of parents, ignored, you know, the first few emails just saying, well, you know I did the right thing. I know I live in D.C. This is silly. This is more like sort of incompetence, whatever this is. And I ignored it. And finally, I got a couple calls saying, you know, we really, really need you. I know this is silly. I know you live in D.C., but I really need you to get this stuff. So there's a question, you know, how many of these people just sort of ignored it? Like, that's because they figured they did the right thing. How many folks really are skirting? And I imagine there probably are quite a few people who are trying to get around tuition. I don't see this as an Ellington scandal. I don't see this really as a DCPS scandal. I mean, the real scandal, just broadly, is an education system where you've got some of the richest counties surrounding D.C. who have not established arts schools, given the fact that, you know, content is so important to the future, you know, of society, that they have not established these kinds of schools on their own, that they would need to come to Duke Ellington to go to school, whether they pay or not. Yeah. That's a big issue, I think, when you're just talking about education and what people are thinking about the future of education. But also that you have so many parents who, you know, who would skirt that system. That's 100% on the parents who are going through. They absolutely know they're doing that. To call it a DC school scandal, at best, you've got a problem with registration, that they're not asking for enough information up front. You know, my question was, why am I not being asked all of these papers? Why am I not being, you know, why do I have to present all of these up front before I register the child? Why is it just, you know, ID and license, you know, before, and then now I have to present two or three more pieces? Mm-hmm. So that's a failure in the system. But I just think how we educate people and what we have available for students. I mean, what happens to those kids who get kicked out because their parents, you know, can't afford tuition and they went through all of this? They risked all of this to try to get into this particular school that has this particular program. From what I know, the next available option is in Baltimore at the Baltimore School AI.
Mm-hmm.
The next to that is New York at LaGuardia. So, you know, what options do they have? I mean, that's a bigger problem. But I think it's just getting caught up in all of this, you know, so-called scandal of the city. People want to jump on it. And the fact that, you know, Ellington just had a $170 million renovation
which
with $100 million over.
Yes, it is as well. You know, we do have to reflect on, you know, sort of the state, the condition of the district public school system, and also, you know, neighboring Prince George's County. I mean, there is like this sense that, or this impression that there are these ongoing scandals at these majority black school systems. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's, and here, you know, you have another mark on that, you know, as far as this latest Duke Ellington episode. And so, yeah, that is a lot, you know, something is going on there, whether it's deliberate or sort of, you know, sinister or nefarious or not, or it's just, you know, just a reflection on just, you know, bad administration and folks not really, you know, holding to a very high standard, the education of our black children. I mean, you know, of our black young people. That's important. And so, you know, and these are schools, including Duke Ellington, that are majority black schools, and we have to have that. We are not having enough of an intense conversation about the academic progress of our children. The indicators are still showing that we've got a lot of work to do on that front.
James.
You know, the interesting thing about it is that there's a side issue here about what is a D.C. resident? How did you find D.C. resident? And here's why it's such a problem here. You have a lot of, I'll use the word intercourse in terms of those of us who live in Ward 9, as opposed to those of us who live in the city, in terms of people going to church. I'm from Ward 9, and I go to church.
You say Ward 9, for those who don't understand what you mean, please explain that.
Prince George's County is considered, anecdotally, I guess, and in a joking fashion, is Ward 9 because so many district residents have left the city to move out to Prince George's County. So they call themselves, Ward 9. Some people don't like it, though. But the point is that you have a lot of interaction between Prince George's County residents and in the district. So there needs to be a hardcore definition of what a resident is. And that has to come from the D.C. Council. And the D.C. Council really needs to really define what a D.C. resident is. Now, Eric is saying, well, that's not a big issue.
I'm not saying it's a big issue. I'm just saying that, you know, to be clear, you know, Duke Ellington can take Maryland and Virginia residents. I mean, I've been at the auditions. There are people from France coming to D.C. Go to Duke Ellington. I mean, it is a world-renowned school in that sense. We may not think of it that way, but it is. It is a very high-quality school for what it does. So people are, you know, they can take these people. The issue is that people are faking being in D.C. Mm-hmm. so they don't have to pay the tuition. They could freely come from Maryland, Virginia to go to Duke Ellington and pay the $12,800. So the question is, they're doing this to get around the money. That's the issue.
Yeah, because I'm not sure I understand what you're saying, James. I mean, either you live in D.C. or you don't. I mean, I don't understand your point.
Well, see, that's a good thing you just brought up. You say you either live in D.C. or you don't. And that's what the legislation needs to define, because it hasn't been defined that way clearly. There are rumors and whispers about a particular council member who has residency problems. He represents a ward in the city, but he has property outside of in Prince George's County where members of his family live. And there are murmurs in this particular ward that this person really isn't a resident of D.C., so therefore shouldn't be on the council. What I'm saying is it's got to be clearly defined what a D.C. resident is, and that really hasn't taken place, which is why you have this mess going on with Duke Ellington.
I need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Ronnie in Maryland and Anthony in Northeast D.C. We're at the Reporters Roundtable. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum, the Insight segment on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation at the Reporters Roundtable. Let me go to the phones. Let's talk to Anthony, calling from Northeast. Anthony, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Mr. Fisher, for letting me on the air.
Sure.
As a black conservative, I am very disappointed to President Trump and how this administration has made a mockery of his presidency. I voted for him because I didn't want to see another Clinton. But it seems like is worse than the Clinton administration, especially how this, in just almost 2 years, this president has no intelligence, and he's not really a real conservative. And it's sad that I also feel like the Republican Party has no compassion for nobody, and the way they treated Michael Steele, the first black Republican to become the party first chairman, and they treat him like nothing. Especially when you, it's like, if you don't like black people, just go ahead and say it.
Well, I think we've heard a lot of that over the past year. I don't, and I say that, Anthony, you know, partially tongue in cheek, but I think it's not a stretch for some people in the Republican Party to, whether they know it or not,
right,
to make comments that are obviously at worst racist, at best ignorant.
Michael Steele, he knows that as someone who has been a Republican Party professional for like 30 years now. Michael knows this. He's, and anyone that's familiar with internal Republican Party politics, particularly black conservatives and Republicans who work as either operatives or strategists or consultants within the party, they're exposed to those types of conversations all the time. You know, what was said during CPAC, which, you know, why aren't we having that conversation, by the way, about why does Prince George's County, a majority black county, still allow CPAC to happen at National Harbor? Like, and nobody makes any noise about that. That still floors me to this day. But it's still it's a very familiar conversation. You know, the racist jokes. This is even before Trump, and, you know, or making, you know, very, you know, off-the-cuff remarks about someone's skin color or about their background. I mean, that black Republicans and conservatives who know are exposed to that on a regular routine basis. And they feel, and Michael, you know, on some levels, you know, Michael is real genuine. You know, he means well. But on other levels, Michael just finally came to a moment where he can't manage it anymore. This is a very new kind of extra Republican Party.
I think that was exceptionally well said, and I think the other thing, James, as our as Anthony was, you know, suggesting, or I would suggest this, you know what you were getting when you got Donald Trump when he knocked off 16-17 other candidates,
right?
He told you who he was. You knew that he was not a traditional Republican, not a traditional conservative, not a traditional politician, not a politician at all. Mm. So I don't, I guess I'm a little surprised by what you're saying, Anthony, is that you had long enough to examine what you're, you know, what you're dealing with. And a lot of the pundits during the campaign were saying, well, once he gets into the White House, is that he was going to calm down and he was going to stop tweeting. And but others said a 70-year-old man is who he is.
Hmm. I agree with that. And to me, I remember, as old as I am, remember the Clintons. And I didn't want to see another Clinton in the office. But you know what? Sometimes we get blind and we awaken and it's too late. Mm-hmm. But you gentlemen have a nice evening and thank you very much and bye-bye.
Well, thank you so much, Anthony. I appreciate it. Let's go to Ronnie. Ronnie, calling from Maryland. What's on your mind?
Well, good evening, gentlemen. How y'all doing?
Just fine.
How are you doing?
Thank you, sir. All right, dude, I'm going to say this, fellas, and I'm going to make mine real brief. Here's the kicker. How many of us black men have children that if you're in a position of authority, which I do it because I'm in law enforcement. I have two bars on my collar. I'm a captain. I love my children. So which means I'm not going to let them get locked up. I'm going to do everything in my power to protect them. That all that man did was protect his daughter. First of all, I don't want my kids going to no school in Kip because I already heard bad things about him.
Now, when you say daughter, are you talking about the president and his daughter, or are you talking about Antoine Wilson, the recently fired chancellor of D.C. Public Schools?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Richard, the chancellor.
Okay, go right ahead.
You know, so I'm very offended by everybody that keeps talking about this man. Because first of all, he came into a new city. He don't know not a kind of picket thing was going on. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you know what? How many of us? I'm pretty sure everybody at this panel has children. You going to tell me that? What's the old saying? Hey, I got the hookup. He had the hookup. Mm. Then they degraded him. and put him at $140,000 for a severance pay, Mr. Fisher. You know for yourself, man, that's only a GS-14 in the government. That is no money. That's no money. So he should tell D.C., I'm so disappointed in the mayor because I live in the district, and I'm probably not going to vote for her. I wish she'd get kicked out of office because she's tacky. He's in the position of authority in a new city in which where his daughter can get a very good education. Now when she goes to apply for an HBCU such as Howard University, Morgan, Hampden, they're going to look at her different versus, hey, you graduated from a D.C. public school. They're going to look at you strange because I had to do it. My daughter's just graduated Hampden. You know, Hampden is expensive.
Oh, yes. Yes. Well, but Ronnie, let me stop you here because I don't want to get too far afield here. Your thoughts, Eric, about what he's saying.
You know, it was funny because I sat next to the chancellor at a dinner for Duke Ellington. Funny enough, when his daughter was still at Duke Ellington earlier in the year, and he was talking about his struggles, just trying to find the right fit for her at the time. And, you know, I do feel for him, you know, but he also came in and the first thing he did was, you know, was come up with a rule that said you can't do what he did. And so that's what looks bad, that he did something that, you know, others couldn't do. You would think, if anybody could make a switch, the chancellor should be able to make a switch, particularly coming into a new city and not knowing, but, you know, by rumor, what might be a good fit for his daughter. Politically, it didn't work out right. And I think people were just really sensitive to the fact that they can't do that when their own child has an issue.
I think it was unjustified for people to pile on him like that publicly. You know, you're particularly many public officials and elected officials doing that. But at the same time, I mean, he's a major public or a central public official running a major school system. And so, you know, we have to hold him accountable and he has to hold himself. We have to hold him to a high standard, you know, and that's part of the problem. I mean, I understand the caller's point that, you know, like when folks are in positions of authority, and when they have an opportunity there to do whatever they can do for their kids, they do it. But it's like, you know, particularly in this area, there's a lot of that going on. There's too much of it going on. It's perpetuating a vicious cycle. Eric made the point just earlier about how, like, in Prince George's County, there is no, and I'm a Prince George's County resident, and it's, I don't have my child in a Prince George's County public school. One of the reasons is because there is no real robust arts or music program or school that's in Prince George's County, you know, particularly a high school, you know, but there should be. And then Prince George's County has all these major universities that are in its jurisdiction, and it's not leveraging those institutions at all, you know, whether it's University of Maryland College Park or Bowie State University, you know, kind of, you know, fomenting partnerships with them, you know, to make sure that we're putting out some scholars instead of just students who are, you know, in some cases functionally illiterate. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have to think on a very high level, and we have to start holding ourselves as black adults and holding our black kids, black students, to a very much higher standard.
James, go right ahead.
Two quick things. Number one, I believe the chancellor should have the absolute right, and the next chancellor should negotiate this into the contract, to send their kids to any public school they want. Absolute right. That's the first thing. The second thing is, and I'm just going to say it, I wonder, was it a Jenny Niles thing? Jenny Niles was the deputy mayor for education. And when Mayor Bowser told her to resign, I'm sure there were some forces in this city who said, well, if she has to resign, so does he.
Well, that was one of the discussions. And let me say, when the chancellor was here the day before the mayor asked him to resign, your suggestion about chancellors, wherever they come from, should, if they have children, be allowed to send their children wherever. One of our callers said that. And Ronnie, I will tell you, when he was sitting here with me, you know, as a father of a girl, I told him, yes, I certainly feel for you. I empathize, but you were hired to reform a school system.
Right.
And you know, Eric, and I don't want to get into any of the details, but I just got the impression as it relates to his daughter's situation, that it was considerably more severe even than he let on.
I think so.
Yeah. And so, you know, we certainly, and this is not, I'm not being trite at all. We certainly do wish him well. You know, from a father's, you know, perspective, we certainly do wish him well. And hopefully he will land on his feet. Ronnie, thank you so much. I want to get this in real quick. This comes from the President Obama files from last week.
Generally speaking, you didn't hear about a lot of drama inside our White House. We didn't have a scandal that, you know, embarrassed us. There were mistakes. We'd screw up. But I know that seems like a low bar, but...
That was President Obama speaking at a private event last week where no recording devices were allowed, but it is 2018. And, you know, we often don't hear the president, President Obama, commenting so directly, giving jabs to the current administration. And so some would argue that this was uncharacteristic. I've got about a minute or so left. James, I'll start with you. Your thoughts about the president jabbing the Trump administration.
Well, let me just say I'm a somewhat presidential scholar. Generally, presidents don't comment on their predecessors because they just don't. However, I think President Obama made a good point about the scandals. You really didn't have any major scandals with this president. And so I think that's very interesting.
Go ahead. Right. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, I think it's more than just that they don't. I think they also want to be of counsel when something goes down. And that's part of the, you know, the connection to ex-presidents. But I think both he and George Bush, you know, have just said, have just given up on that notion, based on the number of things that they said. I think, you know, we should all be a little bit worried about that.
Yeah, how about that? Go ahead, Charles, 15 seconds, last comment.
Yeah, I think, you know, look to President Obama to be a lot more vocal because it's 2018. He's out on the campaign trail, right? And so, you know, Democrats really need to make a strong showing, not just in the congressional midterm elections, but also those state legislative and gubernatorial races as well. So, I don't think he was bothered at all, nor were Democrats, by the fact that that tape right there got leaked. I think you're going to get more moments like that.
Yeah, no drama, Obama. There it is. James Wright, Eric Easter, Charles Ellison, thank you all so much. I appreciate it. That is the Daily Drama on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, February 28th. I'm Harold Fisher. Stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.